Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome to a oddly timed half episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Episode 024.5 or 0.2 or 0.25. I don't know what you want to call this, but in any case, my name is Joey here. As always, on the coast line on a beautiful Saturday night in Ontario. How are you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm okay, Joey. I'm okay. I finally recovered from the price drop from last week, so I'm not too bad. How about you, Joey? How's things over there?
Man. I'm great. Long day today, packing, getting ready to go. We went up to meet with my in-laws for a bit. Brought the dog up there, ran him, tired him out, met up with my wife's friend who's going to be staying at our place for the next 10 or 11 days as we travel the West Coast. So quick thank you to the people who have been filling up my inbox with offers for pints and, you know, meetups and stuff. Greatly appreciated, but you know, I've done many things to my wife that I'm sure she'd not have me do again, and I will not add dragging her around to discussions about hard money on our honeymoon to that list, but I appreciate it all the same. Maybe another time.
So you're not going to be doing the great Western Bitcoin mining tour when you're out west? Like, there's a whole bunch of Bitcoin miners where you're going to be going. It's an opportunity you shouldn't pass on. You know, it may be a once-in-a-lifetime honeymoon visit Bitcoin miners. It's almost a coin flip, in my opinion.
You think I could tell her that, you know, submersion mining is, or immersion mining is actually some French restaurant or something like that? Like, could I swing? I doubt it. It's going to be a tough sell.
Christina Lake seems like a very nice place to visit. Although, but once you get there, who the heck knows? Once you visit the mining facilities over there at DMG, but there's a few others out there. We're not going to just focus on DMG. But Joey, I also just wanted to say one thing. I also went to go visit the in-laws, and I got this excellent shirt today. I'm just going to put it up here. And
incredible.
Yeah, so we finally got our first shirt. It's a prototype. We're kind of doing the white paper right now. So I want to thank my sister-in-law for doing this shirt for us. And we're going to try getting some merch out in not too distant future. This is just the very beginning. It's kind of a prototype and see how things work from here.
Love it. I love it. I guess we should talk about the price of Bitcoin. Let me pull my
might as well get this show in the roll.
Yeah, the price of Bitcoin in U.S. dollars is, drumroll please, $45,135.18. Low. It was like $45,500 not long ago. What is it in Canuck bucks?
$57,189. I remember being at this number in U.S. just a few months ago. We'll be back. We'll be back. Just, you know, keep stacking away, people. We'll get back here. So, yeah, just going to move on. I want to talk about Canadian news right away. And the first,
should we tell people what we're doing tonight, like what the format's going to be, a little different than usual?
Go ahead.
Len has graciously put together the Canadian stories, and he's going to rip those stories as we normally would in the B block/C block of the podcast. We're going to release this on, I think, Monday, September 13th, by the sounds of things, by our behind the scenes discussion in the 30 seconds we talk before the show starts. And next week, which will be the week of September 20th, we'll have hopefully either Len and a co-host or just Len doing his best Peter Schiff impression, talking about Bitcoin, the A block, B block, C block, rolling downhill the entire time, taking breaks only to hydrate and nothing else. And then the week after that, we'll be back to normal. Actually, I think even that week, we'll probably do a nooner on Wednesday. So no nooner this week. Nooner the following week on the week of September 20th, and then we're back to the normal schedule with some absolutely stellar guests for the first 3 weeks of my return from the West Coast. I am pumped about those guests. Like, I could not be happier with the three guests we got coming up. It's very, very hype.
Joey, once you come back from your honeymoon, we're hitting the ground running, and it's not just the first three guests we're going to have lined up, but just beyond that, we have a lot of potential great guests that are going to come on the show. They're going to provide a lot of informative information about, well, I don't want to say what it is about. We'll have to come in and listen to what we're going to be talking about. But yeah, so next week, it's probably going to be a little bit of a different episode. We'll see if it's going to be myself doing it solo or if I have a guest host joining in. I kind of have my fingers crossed we do have a guest host, but you know what? We don't have Joy for too long today, so I think we should just move on to what we have to talk about. So yeah, just talking on the Canadian side of things, we'll talk about the very first thing, which is the biggest one, is ShakePay. And they talked about their Visa Bitcoin back card. And the waitlist position will be frozen on Monday afternoon. That's Monday, September 13th. Beta tests will initially start for the top 50 swappers, but no date was given as to when the beta test would begin. Cards will be rolled out in waves following that. And ShakePay cards will have a 1% sats back with an additional 1% on the first $5,000 spent. There is no limit to sats that can be earned. The sat rewards are not available instantly, but as soon as a transaction is settled, which is approximately 1 to 3 days, there will be brand partners where you could earn additional sats back. This will be both crypto-related partners and more traditional partners as well. Tahini's would be an example of this partner. And just to give you an idea, all this information was given to us by our good friend Jordan. Jordan's a good friend of the show and has been very informative, providing us information from day one. He also did some research on this, and he said that he looks through ShakePay's followers, and Tahini's is the only real business that they follow. So he suspects that there's going to be some sort of connection between ShakePay and Tahini's. So you get additional sats back when you buy stuff at Tahini's, but remains to be seen. And ShakePay also said that we will be excited to see who will these partners be. I look forward to seeing the card, actually. The card will be live internally in a few weeks. It works great both on Apple Pay and Google Pay. Transactions will be run on the Visa network, so it could be used wherever they accept or transactions can be done with Visa. This is only going to be virtual at first, and the physical will be coming at a later date. And the transaction limit is going to be about $250 initially. And they also announced $100,000 of community fund that people can apply for. Basically, it's a grant pool for power community-led initiatives to support increasing Bitcoin and card adoption in Canada. Finally, the shaking of sats is not ending. So that's a good thing. So all this information, thank you, Jordan. You're a rock star. I mean, you provided this information to me to basically pass it on to everybody here. So if anything here is wrong, blame me. If everything here is right, blame Jordan. I'll take all the blame, but I'll give Jordan all the credit.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you, Jordan, for that. Jordan popped into our Friday Twitter spaces yesterday a little at like late or near the end just to give us that update. That's big, man. I guess my first question, and like this is probably just me speaking from a position of ignorance on such things, you know, as debit card rollouts or credit card rollouts, but why only 50 at a time? What is the rationale there, you think?
I think that they just want to test it out. This is a brand new initiative. Who the heck knows how it's going to be played out? It could be too much demand for ShakePay to actually meet whatever demand there is. So maybe they're just rolling it out in stages. This way they could kind of work out any kinks that may come up, especially if you're dealing with only the first 50 people. If you're going to piss anybody off, you're only going to be pissing off a small number of people, maybe not the greater masses. But you are kind of pissing off the masses by not letting it be rolled out to everybody at the same time. So I think this is a strategic move on their part just to ensure that whatever is going to be presented to us in the public, it's going to be done correctly. So the first 50 people, they're going to be beta tested. Hopefully it works. And then they're going to roll it out on a grander scale.
I love this, man. I you know, every day sending money back and forth to like 4 or 5, 6 people, just trying to keep it consistent, trying to make sure that I don't steal anybody's money, getting messages from people early on that I wasn't sending money back or that I owed them 2 shakes and stuff like that. All worth it now. Len, I thought that when we became Bitcoin influencers, we would get a chance to get this card early. And yet here we are on the outside looking in, knocking on the window like somebody at, you know, a homeless shelter or something, like, please, sir, just a crumb, sir, that's just a sat for us humble podcasters. No, but in all seriousness, I was thinking when you were kind of like rhyming off the number of the businesses that they might be coordinating with, you mentioned Jordan said Tahini's is, you know, on their follower list. That's an obvious one for me. I think that's probably going to be a smash hit. The other one that I would like to see, and call me crazy here, but can we get one of these oil and gas companies to sign on for this? Can we do that? One of these guys who are, you know, potentially using Canadian resources and, you know, helping the Canadian economy along in the face of all the ESG stuff. Like, I would love that. It might be a bit of a pipe dream, no pun intended there, but I would love to see an oil and gas company hop on for some extra sats back. That would be so sick.
We need some sort of connection between the two. It's hard for me to connect the dots with immediately, but we could probably do that. Just want to also state that Jordan correctly indicated in the chat, it's not 50 at a time, but it's the first 50 beta testers will be the first beta testers will be the top 50 swappers. So it's not going to be done in 50 person chunks, but rather the first 50 people on the list are going to be given the opportunity to use the Visa card. And then beyond that, who the heck knows if it's going to be done in 50 chunks, 100 chunks, or everybody getting at the same time. Just wanted to point it out that Jordan is providing us some really good information.
Yeah, that's good, man. What do you think the over under is on? Well, maybe not over under. What? When do you think you and I will get that card? Like, how? Where are you in the list? You like top 1,000, top 2,000? Where are you?
Good question. I don't know where I stand. Where we're going to be getting it, like when we'll be getting it, I suspect it's going to be before the end of this calendar year. Just my guess.
I'm at
So,
581. I expect to get it before November. That would
yeah, and
be
I think that's a
acceptable.
face safe bet. Yeah, not a safe moon, but a safe bet. That's my opinion. All right. That's it for Shake Fee. We got to keep this thing rolling pretty quick. I want to talk about the Bank of Canada, and they advertise five CBDC related job openings. And quote, "We aim to design a CBDC with cash-like properties in digital form. Should be highly private, yet meet the obligation to be compliant with anti-money laundering and other regulations," unquote. And there's also some other breaking news from the Bank of Canada. The Bank of Canada keeps key interest rates on hold at 0.25% and is also maintaining its quantitative easing program at a target pace of 2 billion per week. 2 billion per week. I thought it was 2 billion per month. I was wrong on that. 2 billion per week. That makes
It's a
it
lot.
four times worse, or more than four times worse than I initially thought. Yeah, so basically we have very high inflation. It's terrible. And also the Bank of Canada governor says that the interest rates will be remaining where they are, but they'll be winding down at the time the quantitative, sorry, they'll be r rising once the quantitative easing program is winding down. So if you're going to take that into context, if you're going to keep interest rates where they are and you won't raise them until quantitative easing is going to be winding down, so we're going to have interest rates remain for some time, but also QE is going to remain for some time in that same breath. So at the end of all this, we're going to be indebted a lot of money, and that's going to devalue the Canadian dollar.
Did you see the other word, notable piece of vocabulary that entered into the Canadian Bank of Canada Rubicon during this last announcement?
Go ahead. No, I missed it.
That inflation would continue to run hot, but would be transitory.
Yes, 3%. He expects it to remain 3% and transitory.
I
You know
love it.
what? We've heard this enough. Transitory has been redefined. It's no longer what we initially thought it was going to be. It's transitory means permanent. So,
This is not surprising. Like I was saying on the Two Whites and a Blue podcast that recorded yesterday, finally, for the first time in like a month, that we are, even if you don't believe that Bitcoin is some kind of, a safe haven or even worthy of like a 1% allocation in your portfolio, at some point, I think the most anti-Bitcoin people have to admit that this should look like the end of the fiat system to you. You're taking, I was explaining to Mike yesterday that you can take a loan against your house now at basically 0%, or I guess one and change, or maybe two and a little over 2%, and put it into the stock market. And as long as you get an average return, over the course of 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, whether it's 5%, 6%, 7%, even 3 or 4%, which is very unlikely with the printing going on and the asset inflation going on and people trying to get out of cash. But even if it was that low, the money that you took out against the house is free money. And so when the Bank of Canada comes out with an announcement like this and says, yeah, this is going to continue, the quantitative easing program, the asset purchase program is going to continue. We're in an election cycle now, so without getting political on this show, the odds of a major policy shift from BOC is almost 0%, and it'll probably remain like that, I would guess, for what, maybe 10 months after the election, 12 months after the election. Like it'll be a while. And so like this kind of thing, when I'm telling people that you have to start looking at the environment you're in if you're an investor, whether it's in Bitcoin or anything else, and deciding, is there money I'm leaving on the table because I'm not taking advantage of this? Like, oh, it's too strong a phrase almost, it feels like, but this fiat collapse that's happening right in front of you. All these things going on with interest rates and QE, And then in the United States, like, we have people who are in, like, on the board at the Federal Reserve day trading stocks in million-dollar positions. Like, this is peak corruption, peak collapse type stuff. And I think if you're not taking advantage of this, like, I don't know how much more you need to see from the BOC or the Fed or ECB or whatever, right? Pick your jurisdiction. How much more do you need to see before you start playing the game by the rules that are being shown to you? I'm not sure. I don't know how many people are still in 60-40 portfolios or something comparable, but well, no one on this show, obviously, but like, there's people out there who are still sitting in 60-40 or like still buying gold. We talked on our spaces yesterday about, you know, the gold value prop, and how, you know, I whether I disagree or agree with that guy, pop culture math or whatever, that came into the spaces, like, he was saying it's a deflation hedge. I would say, even if you think that, the market doesn't view it that way, and it doesn't trade that way. It goes up, even if it's briefly, there's some acceleration and some velocity behind the price movements when there's periods of what's presumed to be inflation. And I'm looking across the board, I'm thinking, this is out of control, man. And gold's not moving, and Bitcoin is. I don't know. What do you tell people, Len, if they're not invested in Bitcoin? 1%, 5%, 10%? Like, what would it take? If this is not doing it for you, like, what is the catalyst going to be? What is the you know, finally the straw that breaks the camel's back in the retail portfolios that are not exposed to Bitcoin? What is it going to be if it's not this?
It's when people are unable to make ends meet with the money that you're getting paid today. So as money continually gets deflated or debased over time because of money printing, inflation goes up, and you know, the dollar that you have today doesn't stretch as far tomorrow because of that fact. So I think that's going to be it. When people, you know, next month, next year, and a few years from now, they realize, what the heck, I can't do the same that I did a few years ago or yesterday or even last year, then they're going to make a change, and they may look to somewhere else where they could park their money. And Bitcoin's a fantastic place to do so. But there's still a lot of speculation about Bitcoin being dirty, Bitcoin being volatile, and there's some truth to the volatility aspect. But if you're using it for if you purchased it today and you're using it for day-to-day purchase, that's correct. But if you bought it, you know, a few months ago, last year, or even before that, then volatility doesn't really matter because the price has gone up quite a bit. And it probably will continue to go up at the same type of pace that it has in the past few years. So, and the dirty side of things, yeah, I don't buy that. It's energy intensive. It's an energy hog. I will not fight that argument, but dirty energy, nah. So I don't know. Well, people just have to eventually adopt it. That or something else. Gold doesn't seem to be doing, nearly the same as, so I don't know.
What do you think is going to take, like, where is the money going to come from for people who are not invested yet? Because I think about my own situation, and I think about, like, friends of ours who, man, honestly, like, I got friends not just in the BTC hype chat, like the Telegram or whatever that we're in, but I would say there's other people who are messaging me, like, on the daily saying, oh man, you got to get into uranium, but they have no Bitcoin. Like, they're talking about buying uranium stocks. Okay, like, uranium's not the worst thing to get involved in. Like, there's a lot of good fundamentals if you're looking at uranium market and shortage of available physical uranium. But you know, those same principles apply to Bitcoin and have for a long time. And, you know, without a doubt, the price of Bitcoin has been more responsive to those changes in demand because of the inelasticity of supply. And so I just wonder, like, where is the money going to come from if it hasn't come already? What are these people going to pull out of in order to be exposed to Bitcoin? Because presumably, if you have the risk appetite for uranium futures or uranium, like Sprott, whatever uranium, physical uranium holdings, you must have it for Bitcoin, but it doesn't appear that people do. So what's the gap?
The people that you're dealing with are in Canada mostly, and they're living a certain lifestyle and they're accustomed to a certain way of doing business. Imagine if you're living in a country where you're getting money from somewhere like Canada or UK or United States. And when it comes through Western Union or whatever else, it's it comes in, but it there's a lot of it that's lost in the transmission process. And when it's now being adopted with or changing it to Bitcoin, where people are sending Bitcoin to these countries that don't have as much money, you're going to have a inflow of Bitcoin going into those countries, and there's going to be adoption rate is going to be increasing. And this is how it's done. You're not going to flip a switch and Bitcoin's going to be used all over the world right away. It's going to be a slow adoption process, and it's going to start with these countries that they're getting these remittances, and it's going to be rather than US dollars being flowed into country, it's going to be Bitcoin flowing into country, and it's going to cause a cascade effect. And that's when it's going to be the people that you talk to. Once these countries, a lot of them adopt it, then eventually the people you talk to is going to say, wow, you know, maybe we should put money in Bitcoin, and they'll realize that it's a good store of value. That's what I think, because it's
Maybe.
not going to be a quick transition. That's what I think.
I think about like, again, not to get, I don't want to get too deep on this topic, but I've been thinking about this probably since March 2020, like when gold didn't run up to 5,000, right? Like, what else do you need to see to understand or to at least like demonstrate that you think maybe the store of value for the 10,000-year-old store of value is not what you thought it was? With that value prop maybe disappearing or eroding a little bit. What, like, if this ain't it, I don't know what it is. Not that I'm
Yeah.
complaining. I'll take the sats, I'll take the Bitcoin, but I don't
Exactly
understand
that.
what else.
Exactly that. So it's an opportunity to buy cheap sats. So I don't think we should be complaining, as you said. We should just be taking this as an opportunity to increase our wealth by buying more Bitcoin on the cheap. And
Yeah.
yeah. I want to keep moving on because we're kind of short on time. I want to move on to a company we talk about quite a bit, Luxfolio. And Luxfolio, they actually released some information saying that they were listed on the Frankfurt Exchange this past week. So this is actually good news for them, because it's going to increase their ability to sell shares to individuals that want to buy in. We've been also talking about them in a very positive light, and I actually found the first chink in their armor, Joey. And
Amazing.
they actually released also some news that they diversified into Ethereum with acquisitions of Ethereum miners. So it says here it's a wholly owned subsidiary, West Block Capital, has entered into an asset purchase agreement with Black Cloud Crypto Investments. And this is to purchase the assets of Black Cloud's cryptos, Ethereum mining and hosting operations. Black Cloud is a cryptocurrency mining venture based in Lethbridge, Alberta, that focuses on Ethereum miners. And this whole exchange was for about 700,000 shares of Luxfolio. And these Ether miners will contribute about 17.5 Ethereum per month based on the current difficulty rates. Ah, they're a shick winner.
I was on the Hut 8 investor call last week. I don't know. Did you tune into that at all? The AMA?
No. I tweeted it out as much as I could, but I did not follow that. No.
I was listening to it while I was getting limber for football, and
Okay.
it was Sue Ennis and Jamie Leverton, and they also had on there two members of their legal team. I think also their CFO was there, and maybe one other person from Hut. And a lot of the standard questions about ESG and stuff that we talked to Sue about in our interview with her, and this a lot of other stuff too that I think is pretty predictable as far as line of questioning. But one guy asked, "Why are you mining Ethereum and supporting the network if you think that they're going to move to proof of stake? Because presumably moving to proof of stake means that you have to find another token that's profitable, and that's very difficult to do as traffic comes off of that network and moves somewhere else." So I'm curious as to why these other companies are investing in Ethereum mining when they could be just investing in Bitcoin mining, with the understanding that the network is going to move away from that mechanism for, whatever the POW mechanism, it's going to disappear. The other thing they mentioned on the hot call, and this is not quite like Luxfolio related, but it's something to note. The Hut is of the opinion that they're not going to move to proof of stake. If they ever do, they're not going to move there for 2 years, and that's way outside the Ethereum timeline. So I don't know. I look at stories like this and I think, like, is it possible these guys are just trying to get as much as they can before it goes to proof of stake, just in case they have some say over the network? Maybe. Is it, a hedge against Bitcoin? I doubt it. I honestly don't think that's the case. I think it's just that they have all the firepower and Bitcoin is very competitive, especially for these smaller miners. Like Luxfolio is a good example of this. I'd be curious as to what these other companies say. If we ever do get somebody from Luxfolio, I want to ask them that, because it's a question I hadn't really considered from the standpoint of an investor, for example. How you defend to your investor base that you're parking resources in a coin that's not going to reward you for mining for much longer if you believe the timeline set out by the founders and the other insiders, we'll say.
And I can't speak too much about Ethereum, but I do know that this whole process you're talking about is part of Ethereum 2.0, and there's no real deadline as to when that's going to be released. But in the meantime, they're actually burning tokens. One of their latest, last EIP, I believe, introduced a new mechanism where they're going to be burning tokens. In the past, we used to give those tokens to the miners, and those are now lost. They're being burned. And that's creating additional scarcity amongst Ethereum or Ether coins or tokens. But all of that being said, it's hard for me to answer anything like that because I just don't know enough about it. And I too would love to get somebody from Luxfolio and ask them a question like that. It's just beyond me, to be perfectly frank.
I'll tell you guys right now, listening public and viewing public, if you ever see me wearing a Luxfolio shirt, it will be because we got them on the show. That's going to be our asking price for interviews from now on. Just a t-shirt. I got to add to my collection.
So we set the bar right there. All right, let's move it on. I want to talk about Bull Bitcoin, and they are now using Lightning Network, and Canadians can now buy and sell Bitcoin on Lightning with Bull Bitcoin. Users can buy and sell using Bull Bitcoin and the Lightning Network, and same day payments are done when selling. So if you sell, you get the money in the same day, which is pretty damn good. This Lightning Network integration was entirely open source, no doubt, because everything seems to be open source with Lightning and to do with Bitcoin. They're aiming for non-custodial business model, and Lightning gives them that option. It will also offset the increased network fees associated with on-chain transactions, which they're expecting to be increasing over time. Good move. I'm looking to see how this plays out. I love Lightning. I'm going to actually try it out one day to see how it actually works, and I'll report back here.
Bull Bitcoin also is the, don't know if it's a subsidiary of, or if Bills is a subsidiary of Bull Bitcoin, where you can basically pay almost any major Canadian bill, cell phone, hydro, property tax, you name it, with Bitcoin. They handle the conversion and tackle all the logistical issues for you. So I look at that company now and I see, okay, they're going to use Lightning as a main feature of their suite of services, retail services for investors. And they also have payments as a big retail service for investors. So as you and I know, and people listening and watching know, these are sort of synergistic offerings, this Lightning Network plus bill payments. And so I am now paying more attention to these guys than I was a few months ago. I like Francis. He's not everyone's cup of tea. Francis Puglio, the CEO of Bull. But I look at that suite of services and the way that they kind of work together or should work together. And I know Francis is like as hardcore dedicated as they get. And I'm ready to see what they do next, man. Pretty exciting stuff.
I agree. I just want to see what sort of competitive model they're going to bring forth that's going to compete against Shaking for Stats. That's what I'd love to see. Anyways, moving on, talk about Neptune Digital Assets. We talked about them last week. On September 9th, they took delivery at their Colorado warehouse. They've taken S19 Antminer Pro machines. They ordered 530 of these S19 machines. I'm not sure how many were delivered, but the picture shows that there was pallets after pallets full of these machines. So that's pretty good news for them. And they also gave them a breakdown of their recent report. They gave a financial report recently. I just want to give a little bit more insight onto that. They have $57 million in assets as of September 9th. In cash or stables, they have $28 million. Bitcoin, they have $6.6 million. They also hold a crapload of shitcoins. Their mining is, for Bitcoin mining, they have 87,000 terahash of, and that's their mining rigs for that are worth $9.2 million. They have zero debt, and they are staking $325,000 a month with their shitcoins. So it's kind of good, kind of bad, in my opinion. I don't know. I don't like the shitcoin aspect, but you know, they do have some exposure to Bitcoin. They're mining Bitcoin. So if you're interested in getting one of these companies that have exposure, not just in Bitcoin, but other companies, other coins as well, well, here's an opportunity to buy in.
Gary Gensler, the Grim Reaper of the SEC, is calling these guys very sketchy for having all those shitcoins on staking. You know, the last time we talked about pallets pictured in a warehouse as part of a value add deal, it was a very politically charged photo. You'll remember our friend next door in the South sent some money to the Middle East on a pallet, I'm pretty sure, of cash. We won't go there today, but I will say that this is the first time I've heard you use that measuring stick for hash rate. So I'm assuming that's one under, is it petahash and then exahash?
Petahash, exahash, below peta is tera.
That's what these guys have.
Yeah, they're in a tera stage. So 87,000.
Okay. Small per. Operation. Small operation.
Yeah, it relative, like if you look at their price of their stock, it's rather small. I can't remember if it's less than a dollar, but they're not, you know, let's be perfectly honest. They're a smaller company comparison to like, you know, Marathon, obviously everybody is, but Big Farms, you know, even to Luxfolio and to DMG, they're still kind of small. Nonetheless, they're publicly traded, they're Canadian, so they do have some exposure to Bitcoin, but significant exposure to shitcoins as well. So there's going to be some
ticker. What's the ticker on that?
NDA, Nancy Dan Adam, NDA. So I'm going to guess that if you're looking at the price, I don't know, 90 cents per share. That's my guess.
Yeah, people in the chat wondering what's going on with the stock. I don't know. I have no exposure to this. This is the first time I've heard of the company. As usual, Len bringing the initial report from the uncontacted tribes in the Bitcoin equity.
No, we talked about it. It never stuck in your head. We talked about them in the past. And actually, we'll be talking about others that we've never talked about before. But before we go there, let's talk about Hive. And Hive blockchain ordered 3,000 MicroBT high-performance Bitcoin miners. And they've mined their 1,000th green and clean Bitcoin, and they are hodling it. Their 3,000 new Bitcoin miners will be giving a total hash rate of 294 petahash. This is in addition to, they hold 1,000 BTC that's being into cold storage. Their global hash rate is currently at 24.9 petahash, so there's going to be an increase once they get these new miners up and running. Also to consider, they've been mining quite a bit of Bitcoin in the past 2 months. So if you want to go back, in April they mined only 64 BTC, in May they only mined 73 BTC, but if you look at July and August, 200 and 234. That's a significant increase. It's almost 2 to 3 times more Bitcoin. That actually more, if you look at the August number, that they've increased in their Bitcoin mining efficiency. So this is as a result of the mass migration of miners out of China. And, you know, companies like Hive, they're picking up the tabs and they're earning a lot more Bitcoin. Everything is going into cold storage. That's incredible.
I was thinking about listening to some other podcasts, as I do on Saturday mornings, my favorite traditional financial shows, Macro Voices and Market Huddle, all Canadian, by the way, the hosts of that show, those shows, outstanding content. They are on the Market Huddle side, decidedly anti-Bitcoin, and on the Macro Voices side, somewhere in between. The host of Macro Voices wrote a book called The Future of Money, I think, in like 2018, and his bear case for Bitcoin was basically that regulators would crack down. Anyway, I digress a bit there. The reason I bring it up is because the guests that I hear on those shows and other financial shows as well is that the bear case for Bitcoin is that regulators are going to crack down. Now, I personally don't believe that, but one of the things I've added to that sort of set of non-beliefs over the last, 6 months, probably as long as you've been doing the show, Len, 6 or 7 months.
It was the last week of March we started.
Yeah, so like the thing I think I believe now about Bitcoin miners and I think is going to accelerate and continue to grow is that they're a huge part of the chip economy. And that's a big part of the FANMAG stocks. It's a big part of the queues. It's a big part of the market. You know, we see headlines about chip shortages and whatnot. If there was suddenly a breakdown in demand for those things due to regulation, I think as these miners grow and grow and grow, you know, that's a big part of the demand in that sector. And I think that, again, this is like another tentacle that Bitcoin kind of has in the traditional finance. And so it's another reason. I mean, we talk on this show all the time about like the bullish sentiment around miners deploying capital. But just on the peripheral of that, these guys are buying chips at an increasing rate. And that's a huge thing for the sector. If that slows down or is regulated away, you know, the chip demand may recover, but I think that would be a bit of a shock to a lot of people who are invested in something like NVIDIA, for example, or have other stake in Taiwan chip manufacturers. And that's, you know, it's another piece of that game theory about what would it take to ban Bitcoin from a regulator. And I think that's just another another sort of stop in the door, so to speak, from keeping that from happening, which I like. I was happy to see that story and hear these guys talk about that. And so when I hear stories here about miners buying and buying and buying every week, there's no other way to view this besides positively. And there's a number of reasons, including the one I just mentioned.
Not just buying equipment, but holding on to the Bitcoin they mine. That's the combination of the two, to me, is bullish long-term.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So I want to move on to the next story. I want to talk about Bitfarms. And they're Quebec. They're obviously based in Quebec, and their facility out there is now operational and expected to be running at full capacity by the end of September. That's out of Cowansville, Quebec. And this is expected to contribute an additional 100 petahash above the current production level. And to give you some context for where Bitfarms is in terms of how much they're mining, we talked about Hive just a moment ago. Let's look at the months of March and April. They've mined 221 Bitcoin and 232 respectively. And if you look at the last 2 months, say July and August, that's being reported here, 391 and 354 Bitcoin. So they've, it's a continuous growth. Hive seems to have more of a hockey curve growth. This is more continuous growth, but still Bitfarms is on the leading edge of how much Bitcoin is being mined per day. So they're mining approximately 10 Bitcoin per day in August 2021. We talked about HUT, they were doing 10.5. So HUT is kind of keeping pace with Bitfarms. And Bitfarms mined 745 Bitcoin in the first 2 months of the third quarter, equivalent to approximately 90% of the Bitfarms' entire second quarter production. So that's a lot of Bitcoin that they've mined. And I don't know if they're hodling at all. I think they're hodling most of it. I think they're selling a small bit for operational expenses, but nonetheless, they hodl more than what they keep more than what they're selling at a significantly higher rate they're keeping than what they're selling. Again, this is bullish. And this is a company it's growing, it's growing fast. It's growing steadily, but they're not going to stop. They're going to continue to do so. And as they're reaching capacity in Quebec, because from what I understand, the power producers are kind of stopping them from expanding any further in Quebec. They're looking elsewhere, looking in Argentina as a place to expand. So good for them. They're not kind of sitting where they are right now. They're continually trying to expand and improve their position.
Interesting article from not friend of the podcast, but a guy who follows me on Twitter and I follow him, Ethan Liu, which was in, I think, the Globe and Mail or the Post last week about how this would be the last election cycle that was going to be crypto free in Canada. And it shouldn't have been crypto free. There should be a lot of discussion about where this is going, how to support it, how to regulate it, if that's the end game. And we just never made it because we're, as a population, without getting myself into trouble, as a population, we're interested in other things at the moment, let's say, to put it diplomatically. I look at stuff like this about these guys mining in Quebec, and I think, why should Quebec, like maybe you know more than this if you got the article, why would Quebec stop these guys from further expansion?
Power. It's power, and they're power hungry. So if they're going to be giving more opportunity for miners to expand, it's going to take away energy for the rest of the citizens of Quebec.
Do you buy that, though? Actually, do you buy that? Because we've talked about like this sort of marginal extra power that has to be produced. And yeah, I think like what is a better way to use that marginal power than to do something like this?
So right now they're throttling Bitfarms. So during peak demand, Bitfarms doesn't have 100% access to the grid and it's being throttled. But as the demand decreases from the power generators over there, then they give Bitfarms the ability to get 100% access to the grid. So it's being throttled right now. And that to me shows that they're kind of reaching the capacity, what they could do in Quebec. I don't know. It seems to me that there is there's some validity to what they're saying.
You think there's merit to that? Yeah. I personally look at, again, not a new theme for this show, but this like Gell-Mann amnesia. I think that these guys are not giving you the full truth a lot of the time. And so I assume they're not giving you the full truth here either. I think there's probably some special interests at play. And my thought, like, especially because it's not like Quebec, or pick your province, right? It's not like Quebec is the first jurisdiction that has to make these decisions about power usage, about miners, about Bitcoin, about crypto, about, all these different things. This has happened many times in North America over the last 2 years. And so why not take the model of a city or a state or a province that was successful in bringing these companies in, successful in providing the power to them, successful in incentivizing, you know, new brains and intelligence immigration into their jurisdiction instead of this? Like, why go this route? To me, I'm not a Quebecer, obviously, but it's still frustrating because this is gonna happen. You know, I almost don't even want to say it. It's going to happen in Ontario. It's going to happen in Saskatchewan or Manitoba. It's going to happen, you know, in Alberta at some point. It's going to happen in British Columbia. And I just think, like, why not mirror the ones where it worked? They brought talent in. They, you know, they achieved something as far as innovation and a new sector and some, you know, vibrant new people who want to invest in the area because they're coming there for something they're passionate about. Like, the list of reasons to do this goes on and on. And I would get, like I mentioned, if it was the first time, if they were making the mold, but all they have to do is really follow the leader, right? So this to me, like, I know maybe we disagree on this, but like, there cannot be, in my view, an argument that's like, that carries enough merit to outright throttle or stop further expansion of this thing. Like, you got to meet the needs of the people who want to come and invest in your jurisdiction, and you're not doing it.
I'm going to just go on like a little bit on a tangent here. So Quebec, they have a finite amount of electricity that they could generate based on their hydroelectric dams. If you go to other provinces like Alberta, for instance, they have different opportunities that are available to Bitcoin miners because they could tap into not really the grid, but into like the gas that's being flared over there. So then they could actually generate electricity in more creative ways that won't impact the power generation facilities in Alberta. And so that's why I think what's happening in Quebec, it's probably going to be more prominent going forward with other jurisdictions like BC. We don't see it in Ontario because Ontario it's too expensive to mine Bitcoin. But places out where in Alberta, it's very unique in their situation, is that they have a lot of energy that's untapped that could be used in a way that Bitcoin can utilize it. It doesn't have to be close to urban environment. It doesn't have to be close to anything. You could just set up Bitcoin miners right there. As long as they have the ability to communicate with satellites, it's enough for them to mine Bitcoin. And that's where you're probably going to see the future of Bitcoin, to make use of these energy sources that are so far away from urban areas or anywhere that is feasibly possible to actually use the energy and to set up shop and mine Bitcoin. For example, you could do it in a hot spot, a sunny spot like Arizona, where you get, you know, it's a lot of desert, but you get a lot of sun. You could set up solar panels there to mine Bitcoin, and it's not going to impact anybody because it's so far away from anybody. It won't piss anybody off. So that's my thoughts. I think that there's some merit that they're kind of reaching capacity in places like Quebec, where there is a finite amount of electricity. I could be wrong. And in fact, my next story might help your cause. Do you want to go to that?
Tabarnak.
Hey, come on. So my next story, I want to talk about a brand new Bitcoin mining company that just went public. And this is hopefully going to actually, it's going to give you some fuel for your fire that you were just talking about with Bitcoin, Bitfarms in Quebec. So this environmentally friendly Canadian-based Bitcoin mining company went public this past week on the TSX Venture Exchange under the stock symbol SATO, SATO. And this name, SATO, is paying tribute to the Bitcoin founder, Satoshi Nakamoto. And the company is called Canada Computational Unlimited, and it's a high-grade carbon-neutral Bitcoin mining operation. Recently, the Canadian company gained backing from the blockchain equity fund True Global Ventures 4 Plus, and they raised $100 million in funding prior to this whole cooperation. So CCU has contracted 20 megawatts of renewable energy to power its high capacity computational centers in Quebec, Canada. And they also have eyes in the future with ambitious plans to harness 500 megawatts of renewable energy for its use of expanding its power centers by 2023 to 2025. So we have a company here in Quebec. They are currently contracted to take 20 megawatts out of the power generation over in Quebec. And they could also, they're looking to expand to 500 megawatts. So maybe you're right with there is capacity for more Bitcoin miners just based on this story. What are your thoughts, Joey?
What do you think my thoughts are? Of course, they're the same. It's a tabernacle type beat, man. This is ridiculous. These guys are not telling you the truth. They're just not. And I don't know if it's because it's more tax efficient for the province to do things this way. I would also mention that to raise $100 million to mine Bitcoin in a province that says they're running out of power is no small feat. Certainly, the people who have $100 million to give you have some inroads with the provincial regulators and know that there's spare power there. This is a no-brainer to me. And so, like, I honestly, like, we don't have a red book. Like, there's another podcast I listen to where the two hosts keep a red journal, and in the journal, they make calls and they revisit it every day or every show for the year before and see what the calls are, where they are, blah, blah, blah. If we had that book, I would make the call that Quebec will have, you know, additional miners, additional population, additional blah, blah, blah. You name it, right? They got all, I mean, Len, they're not going to stop building townhouses. You know, they want to collect tax from these people, from people like you and me. You know, obviously they have power for that. They're not going to stop building highways and all this other shit, like that, you know, the infrastructure that takes power to both build, maintain, service, all this stuff. They don't care about that. But when it comes to Bitcoin miners, ooh, I don't know. We don't have enough power. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I don't. And why should I? After the story you just told, why should anyone buy it?
They have enough capacity for transfer payments.
L'énergie un peu. I don't believe them. I don't believe them.
Let's just move on, man. Let's just move on. I want to talk about DMG, and we talked about them before. We talked to their CEO. Great company, great
Love
CEO.
DMG.
Yeah, and they announced just this past week that they've become the first Canadian Bitcoin miner to join the mining pool of Marathon, commonly referred to as Marapool. And this is a fully audited third-party firm in the United States. And so on September 13th, DMG will begin pointing 100% of its hash rate towards the Marapool. This is interesting news. So they're kind of aligning their interests with Marathon. This is a U.S. pool, so it's not something that's based in out of China. I like this. It's I think it's a positive news story that's coming out of DMG.
Is DMG, this may be above both of our heads, but is DMG a candidate for acquisition, you think?
I think a lot of companies that are not named Hut 8, Bitfarms are in that same boat. And I was contemplating this when we were talking to Sheldon, the CEO of DMG, but I didn't want to bring it up. But I think that they are.
I guess not, eh? Not during the interview with the CEO.
No, but you know what? It really it's I think it's into play. It's definitely something to consider. But one thing that's going for them that a company may not want to buy them is they're using equipment and they're trying to extend the lifespan of some of the older equipment by using immersion cooling and some creative methods to basically increase the hash rate of them, overclock them. I think that's a creative way of making use of older equipment. And I think that other companies may not want to get that type of company because there's a lot of ingenuity involved. You need a lot of knowledge to maintain that type of system, that type of setup. So that's the one thing that I think is going to deter anybody from wanting to buy sorry, DMG. That's just my two cents.
You don't necessarily have to eliminate the expertise, like the knowledge base, right? Like you can keep Sheldon and the team on and just, you know.
You have to keep them on,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah. Yeah.
if they're given a package that's very favorable, they could just disappear because they're happy with what they have in their pocketbook.
It's
But
an
one thing
interesting
about
like the mechanism for M&A in Bitcoin to me seems it's almost it's well, it's unparalleled for sure, because the companies that are making the most money, like if I think about the miners, for example, you mentioned like Hut 8, Bitfarms. Let's say it's Hut 8, Bitfarms, and Mara. I feel like George Carlin, the things you can't say on TV. Hut 8, Bitfarms, and Mara, the swear words that get beeped out no matter what time of day you say them on television. These guys presumably are making the most money when Bitcoin is the highest in terms of price. And so to acquire these other smaller companies, they would have to pay maximum dollars because that would be the time that they had the most available capital. And it would be the time that the other companies were worth the most as well. So maybe M&A is not the road. Maybe there's another road that we haven't seen or considered yet. But it's interesting to think about. I don't like I'm just kind of thinking aloud. Like I like the story and everything. DMG is a company we like, and we like Sheldon. But all this stuff, you know, next few years, you're gonna see some weird, I think, bedfellows in Bitcoin, especially because of the mining and the way the pools work.
There's an easy way to actually measure this, Joey. Measure the hash rate that a company like DMG is pumping out. And calculate how much it would cost to buy miners to match that hash rate. Which of the two are cheaper? And if it's cheaper to buy miners and set up the miners than to actually buy something like DMG, then that's the course that they'll go. And this is going to be relatively easy to calculate. I'm not going to do it. Let somebody else take care of that. I got bigger and better things to take care of. But I think that's going to be the metric to figure out if it's worthwhile to buy a company like that and just amalgamate it in their existing business. So want to move on, Joey. I want to talk about Coinberry, and they made your crypto accounting easier. Coinberry's profit and loss report calculates your reportable crypto earnings so you don't have to. They were proud to release a new platform feature that may simplify the way we actually figure out this accounting at the end of the year. And it's a profit and loss report that is downloadable in PDF format. And we could use this report to assist in the completion of the T5008 and T5 tax forms. I don't think any other exchanges do this, but I know Coinberry is because they've reported it this past week. Very cool.
This is cover your ears if you're a Bitcoin like anarchist, but to me, the exchanges that offer a service like this, these services are going to take off for sure. They're going to be huge because these guys already have to basically have this data available for the tax man. And so why wouldn't they just sell it to you at an additional cost or like use it to bring you onto the platform? To me, this is a no-brainer.
We don't want to give them opportunity to sell anything else to us.
It doesn't make sense to you though. Like, is this not an obvious addition?
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. As part of a product suite for a trading platform or a buy sell platform, this makes sense. This is a good move from Coinberry, man. And we have not been super kind to them on this show, but that's a good move.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I want to see more exchanges do this type of service as well. Free, of course, free, please.
Let me ask you this. Is this related to the equities thing, you think? Is this tied into that at all?
I didn't connect those dots. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right there because they are trying to get into that space as well. So perhaps there is some connection here. Very cool.
We'll find out soon. We'll find out soon.
Yeah. I want to move on. I want to talk about Bitcoin Well. And they announced the acquisition of Quebec-based Bitcoin ATM operator Enterprises Equibytes Inc. Their ATM network now grows up to 212 machines, and this helps the Bitcoin Well obtain the necessary licenses to operate in Quebec. If you're not aware, up until this point, Bitcoin Well was not operating in Quebec, and I didn't know why, but I guess I know why. The answer was because they couldn't get the licenses, or there were some struggles to obtain the licenses. But now with acquiring this company based out of Quebec, it kind of makes the whole process a lot easier for them to do so that they could potentially have nationwide ATM networks throughout Canada. That's fantastic news.
Bitcoin Well needs to get in touch with Tahini's because Tahini's is putting Bitcoin ATMs in their stores. Ali was sharing that on Twitter probably about a week ago, and it's not a Bitcoin Well ATM. How is this not already a thing?
Are you sure? Yeah, I thought they
Didn't look like it.
Yeah, we'll have to connect these people together. So there's got to be something. You know what? Maybe they'll give us some kickback of a shirt, maybe a free meal or something. We'll see what happens. Joey,
I want to say anything for a shawarma on this program. That's the cost of doing
business. Just about. Except that I wouldn't say Ethereum's good. I would continue to say Ethereum's crap. I want to move on, Joey. I want to talk about WonderFi. I'm not sure if you heard about WonderFi before. They're a company that's they're traded on the NEO exchange under the ticker WNDR. They're a DeFi company that is actually owned and operated by Mr. Wonderful. So we have one of the Dragon's Dens is actually doing something here in the DeFi space. And announced that they have some money in Bitcoin. They have about $1.8 million that they invested in Bitcoin, Ethereum, Uniswap, a whole bunch of other shitcoins. But they have some exposure to Bitcoin. So if you want to invest in a company that does DeFi, if you want to invest in a publicly traded company that has DeFi exposure and some exposure to Bitcoin as well, look at this company, WNDR. So it's called WonderFi. I wouldn't recommend it because I'm not a big fan of DeFi, but there is some connection here with Bitcoin. So that's why I'm kind of bringing this up here. Kevin O'Leary, I'm not the biggest fan of, but you know what? A lot of people, they like him. And he's the guy that's behind spearheading this whole WonderFi project.
Can we, I mean, this is unrelated to the project, but this guy is really leaning into the whole Mr. Wonderful thing. And I cannot figure out why he is doing such a, you know, a disservice to his brand this way. I don't think anyone really calls him Mr. Wonderful apart from people who maybe don't know him that well. Like in the investing space, certainly in the Bitcoin space, I don't hear a lot of people calling him Mr. Wonderful. I always hear people calling him Kevin O'Leary or things that I can't repeat on the channel or in front of my grandparents. You know what I mean? Like it's a very long list of things I've heard him call, but Mr. Wonderful, not usually chief among them. So I'm not sure why he's doing this. As far as like the platform itself, you know, you mentioned Uniswap, for example. Why would anyone invest in a platform that was, you know, featuring a decentralized index where the SEC is, you know, creeping, looking over your windowsill at night if you're trafficking in that kind of nonsense? Like, I just don't understand this, man. I would not be investing in this stuff. I know that DeFi is kind of the flavor of the month for the people who are arm's length from the space. But I think that for people like us, people in the chat, people who are listening, watching, you know, it's not really new. This is not a new phenomenon. If you've been here since 2017, this kind of shit was going on in 2017 too, where they're claiming that there was going to be a, you know, a huge movement to decentralized finance and stuff. But it never lasts because it cannot. There is no free lunch in crypto or anywhere else. I just, you know, for a guy who makes his living on Shark Tank telling people whether or not he'll give them $10,000 for 1% of their lemonade stand, he sure as shit seems to have a hard time figuring out what's a scam and what's not in crypto. So maybe I got to go there with my lemonade stand, see if I can get a five-figure sum out of him for 10%.
Just make sure you don't go on a boat if his wife is at the helm of that boat, because you don't know what's going to happen. Anyways,
you lose your keys in a boating accident with Kevin O'Leary's
It could
wife.
Be worse than that. Anyways, I want to talk about DigiHost. And we've talked about them in the past. That's the company that Brock Pierce is affiliated with. But anyways, DigiHost, traded under the ticker DGHI, they've mined 44 Bitcoin in the month of August 2021. And this is a slight dip from their July 2021 month where they had a production of 51 Bitcoin. They have now holdings of 446 Bitcoin valued at roughly $22 million. You know, we talked about them in not the greatest light because they're associated with Brock Pierce. Nonetheless, they're a Bitcoin miner. They're currently mining 200 petahash, and they plan to expand up to 3.6 exahash by the end of the first half of 2022. That'd be pretty large if they could get the 3.6 exahash. And if that's the case, this is a company that might be a value play, not financial advice.
Never financial advice. Chat buzzing about that Kevin O'Leary boat joke. DigiHost, like whatever, 44 Bitcoin, small potatoes, I think, compared to the companies we've mentioned today, which, good. I don't want to see Brock Pierce succeed, especially because I still can't get over that he had time to respond to that tweet and tell us that we didn't do our research, but then didn't tell us what we messed up on. It was his own Twitter account and his own articles that you were referencing. So yeah. What is wrong with this guy?
That's the thing. I was referencing two tweets that he tweeted out. And if he's going to say that we're not doing the proper research, well, he's spewing garbage if that's the case out of his own, well, I mean, from his fingers.
Yeah, I'm
kind of with you on that. It's funny, you know, he's also associated with, what is it, EOS? I don't know how to describe EOS, is that the shitcoin that he's kind of was affiliated with. So, you know what, he's kind of had some very shady background. Remember when he went to El Salvador as part of the Bitcoin ambassadors?
What a mess. That was a total mess.
So, you know, when you have stuff like that, I didn't elect him as an ambassador for Bitcoin. I'm sure you didn't. You know, it leaves a sour taste in your mouth. And whatever. The fact that he's associated with DigiHost, whatever. I'm not going to hold them too much like that against them too much. I do like the fact that they plan to expand to 3.6 exahash per second. That's a really large number. I don't know if they're going to be able to achieve that. But also to consider, by the time they do achieve it, other companies are going to be doing 13 exahash like Marathon. So that 3.6 is still going to be a big number, but in terms of how it's viewed today, it's going to be much less by the first half of 2022. That's something
to
consider.
Make a dent, right? Is that the thesis?
Yeah, it's diminished. I don't want to say diminishing returns. It won't have the same impact as it is today. You won't, because the hash rate is going to continue to climb with all these companies. The difficulty rate, as a result, is going to be more difficult to mine Bitcoin. Is that's the unique aspect of Bitcoin? I don't want to harp on this too long. We don't have too much time. I want to keep moving unless you want to talk a little bit more about DigiHost.
I just think, you know, when Brock Pierce gets a suit that fits him properly, we can talk about his Bitcoin mining escapades. But until then, he's just another Mighty Ducks wannabe. That's all.
I just want to keep moving on, Joey. Did you hear about Blockstream? And they are partnering up with the financial services giant Macquarie. I think I pronounced that correctly. And they're going to develop and manage the best-in-class zero-emission Bitcoin mining facility. And this will utilize Blockstream's enterprise-grade mining facilities and expertise in mining hardware hosting. And Macquarie will invest in the facility while utilizing its deep expertise in energy to explore opportunities to provide renewable energy to power the miner process. The collaboration is expected to scale beyond pilot as new power resources are developed. Macquarie is one of the world's leading investors in renewable energy infrastructure, with 44 gigawatts of generation under development, construction, or operational as of the 31st of March 2021. It's a good marriage here. I like BlockFi. Sorry, I like Blockstream. They're a great company, and they look to seem to be pushing the envelope into the mining sphere. And if they could somehow create a zero-emission Bitcoin mining facility, this is fantastic news. I want to see how this actually plays out.
I like Blockstream too, but like, can I get a miner that's producing more emissions? Like, where do I invest in one of those guys? Give me somebody who doesn't care about ESG and just cares about CASH and BTC. That's all I care about. These guys who are doing zero emissions, like the problem I have, and whether it's Blockstream or DigiHost or Luxfolio or DMG or Hive, Hut, BitF, Mara, you pick your company, pick your equity. The problem I have is that if you are doing zero emission, you are sacrificing profits in the current environment. That's a fact. To me, I say, don't bow down to the mob. If you already have the hardware deployed, use that stuff the way you intended to use it when you bought it. Don't worry about ESG. Don't worry about emissions. Mine as much Bitcoin as you can. Amass more money than God. And worry about the backlash from regulators later when you have that huge treasury, that huge war chest. Blockstream's still not publicly traded, so I don't know why they're going this direction. Like, why do they care whether or not they're ESG? Who's telling them they have to be ESG? Are they doing raises? Maybe, I guess. I don't know. It's possible. But I think, like, why would you leave money on the table in the name of a set of principles that, to me, has no basis in reality, because I think there's something to be said for ESG, but certainly it's not as dire and as, you know, required a set of values as it would seem if you listen to these people. So why leave money on the table? Help me with this, because you like Blockstream, and I can tell by the look on your face you got something to say. You don't like what I'm telling you, so go ahead.
No, you bring up a really good point. Remember we talked about them in the past with the modular mining units. So this is something that they're developing. I'm not sure if this is going to incorporate with the modular mining units, but if it does, then this is something that could easily be sold to public miners or even private miners out there that could take advantage of it. So if you want a miner out there that wants to use greener energy or zero carbon energy, whatever the heck, zero emission energy to mine Bitcoin, then the only place to get it really is to go to Blockstream and with their partnership with Macquarie. And so this is a way for them to sell to miners that are already doing something. It's not for them to do it themselves, but it's for them to sell out to somebody else. I think it's a good opportunity, especially, I know you may not be big on ESG, but there's a lot of investors that are, and that's a growing number of people. Every day there's gonna be more and more people in that camp. And as a result, the companies that are publicly traded have to cater to those people. And this is one way to cater to those people using these zero emission Bitcoin mining facilities.
Fair. Well, I disagree, but I get that point of view. I mean, as an investor, I don't know. I don't want to ask you about your equity portfolio, but like certainly you and me, at least I'm for sure. I look at like my investment portfolio. I would buy, you know, cigarettes being sold to little kids exclusively if it meant that I was going to be able to print a mint doing so. But I'm sure there are people who don't do that. But my question remains though, like, if you're Blockstream, why are you worried? Are they raising? They got to be raising, right? That's the only reason they would be worried about something like this.
Potentially. Didn't we go through some discussion a few weeks ago that I forget what happened, but it turned out that their valuation was around $2 billion for the company.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So just for us to actually get that information, seems that they might be going on the process, might be going on the path to go and get this publicly traded. I think doing so is going to make a lot of people within the company very rich. So it makes financial sense for them to do so. And so would you invest in Blockstream if, regardless of the price, I mean, if it's something that's reasonable, would it be a company that you consider investing in? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I wouldn't buy Blockstream if the thesis around the value prop and the profit mandate became centered around ESG. I wouldn't. Like, I buy oil and gas stocks, I buy vice stocks, I buy defense. You know, like, that stuff is, for me, blue chip. I look at a company like Blockstream, I think, like, you have the formula. You got the Bitcoin stuff, okay? Bitcoin is going to be a thing that's around for a long, long time. It's going to be successful. I think it's fair to say at this point, regardless whether you think it's going to be 100,000 in a year or 500,000 a year, whatever. It's not going away. There's profit to be made if you follow sort of the honesty that's required of you in the Bitcoin space. But if you're centered around ESG, like Blockstream, I wouldn't. Because then, like, as soon as a company that's, like, led by Adam Back decides that they don't care as much about the mining and network security that's so important to the Bitcoin ethos, and care more about, you know, what Greta says and, you know, these clowns who fly around on private jets and tell you can't drive your car if what they say, then to me, that's, like, you know, that's demonstrating a split between the public persona of someone like Adam Back and what he's actually doing behind the scenes to try and make money and curry favor. And to me, that's where I draw the line for stuff like that.
Sometimes you just need the perception of being green, and that's enough. And, you know, I want to just change topics slightly here. Like Tesla, for example.
Yeah.
A lot of people perceive Tesla to be green, but there's a lot of studies that show that the making of those cars are not. But still, you got a lot of people that are jumping on board just because the perception of it is green. I don't know. And by the way, even going further, did you see that Tesla broke a record on the Nuremberg track with their Model S? So no matter how green or not green their cars are, that car absolutely flew through that track and set a track record. I don't want to go too far. The Tesla cars are great.
That's what everyone says, man. They're fast as fuck. So
they freaking are. Oh my gosh. Anyways, the last story I have, I know we're kind of past the 1 hour mark, so I'm just going to wrap it up here, Joey, unless you want to go any further. I want to talk about Square. And I know they're not a Canadian company, but they boosted their presence in Canada with Square Register. And Square launched a Square Register in Canada to offer cashless payment options to sellers of the country. Notably, Square Register is a point of sale system compromising easy to use software options and built-in payments, which help sellers in managing touch-free payments, online sales, employees, contactless pickups and delivery. Square is a company that is growing, and you've talked about the moat before. It's strong because once you're in it, you remain in it. There's lots of opportunity for people to jump on board if you're a vendor, and once you're there, you're going to get a lot of different opportunities within the Square ecosystem to improve your standing and improve the health of your business. Square is also holding a significant amount of Bitcoin, not as much as MicroStrategy, but they're in the top three or four in terms of how much Bitcoin is owned on the balance books by publicly traded companies. This is a good move. I like it. I think this is a great move for Canadian vendors. I want to see them jump on board if they can.
I love Square as a company. I you know, whatever, simp for Jack, as people have pointed out in the comment section and in Reddit and YouTube videos before. You know, I also love Amazon, and Amazon reportedly anyway is making a foray into this sort of POS space. And so if I was Square, even as a Square investor, like, how do I Square continuing to invest in Square when Amazon is the biggest merchant in the world and can make inroads into that moat in a way that probably no other company in history can. I'm having a hard time with that. I think in Canada, we're lucky because we have some, some difficult regulatory issues to deal with if you're an American company coming over here. And so if Square has already tackled those things, then maybe it's a moot point. But, you know, I would prefer to see Square succeed because of the Bitcoin thing, like you mentioned. I just don't know if they will now. I think Square dropped 2 or 3% Thursday or Friday when that Amazon announcement came out, the POS announcement. Will it continue to go that direction? I'm not sure. Amazon, for all its strengths, seems to have a problem with last mile delivery. So maybe they'll have a problem with this as well. As far as the Canadian vendors thing, you and I have a friend who sells cactuses and Bitcoin seed metal like tap wallets online. And in both cases, Square wouldn't let him use their service for checkouts. Shopify wouldn't let him. Amazon did let him for the wallets, I think, but not the cactuses. And I just think like there's going to be at some point, you know, especially with Bitcoin, this like opportunity for a decentralized or an open source, like a FOSS type interface to dominate this payment space and just let anyone sell whenever they want. We've done this before with Silk Road, arguably. But it seems to me now that this has become sort of a political battle in a way it wasn't 10 years ago and wasn't 15 years ago and maybe even 5 years ago. And it's becoming more and more so. So as much as I think Square and Amazon, all these companies, I think the first one that says we're not going to be political or the moral arbiters of what's for sale, that's the one that's going to be successful. And that one may not exist yet, but that's the one that's going to be successful more so than the ones who choose to placate to, you know, the mores of the day, we'll say.
I have nothing to say on that because I think we're out of time. Sorry to say.
Should we do 15 in Q&A? I still got like half a grenade here to finish. And
I'll let you figure.
My laundry's outside drying because it has to be dry to put in my bag in like the next hour because I got to leave here at 2:30 in the morning to get.
I'll let you figure it out, Joey. I'm at your beck and call. I have lots of stories to talk about. We could do that. We could talk to the troll box. We could do whatever you want. I'll leave it in your
Let's wrap it up. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We will see you soon.
Yes. Do you want to do the price of Bitcoin before we wrap it up? Or
we should. What is it? We're gonna do the price of Bitcoin, then we're gonna talk to the chat for 15 minutes while I finish my beer. The price of Bitcoin in American dollars is $45,288.66.
We went up a little bit, 57,444 in Canadian. And there's no coiner or Bitcoiner this week due to time constraints. So stay tuned. We'll probably have it next week, if not in 2 weeks, for sure.
For sure. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care.